Yes, welcome into My Car Guru on the air for this Tuesday morning, and we say good morning to our guru, Lenny Lawson, with us. Hey, Lenny.
Hey, man.
How's it going?
How are things?
Well, things are good, I guess. A beautiful morning out there, I tell you.
Yeah, I decided to go the back way to work. Either way, it's about 5 miles mm-hmm. to get to the dealership from my house. But, you know, sometimes I like the twisties in the neighborhood and the, driving across historic Main Street in Greenville as opposed to coming down the Lebanon bypass.
mm-hmm.
You know, the Lebanon bypass. When we moved here from West Virginia, that's where that came from. People kept saying, well, you just need to go down the Lebanon bypass. And then you go turn right at Tusculum and stuff. And we just, my parents couldn't figure out where Lebanon was.
Yeah, where is Lebanon anyway?
I don't know. There was Lebanon, Virginia.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
So they just, but Lebanon turned out to be 11E. So
mm-hmm.
Highway 11E. You know, sometimes we do misunderstand people and what they say, and sometimes we make preliminary judgments, and sometimes those judgments are rather harsh. I know I do. I tend to sometimes my mind will immediately go to the worst case scenario, you know, as to why somebody did something. Like, for example, the guy that pulls out in front of me, he really probably doesn't have any kind of personal vendetta against me.
No.
He is not personally trying to ruin my day. It's up to me, isn't it, Timmy, whether I let him ruin my day or not. I've got two acronyms I'm pushing today. The first acronym is FWE, or FWE, if you were trying to pronounce it. And that stands for from what evidence. You know, when you think about anything, you know, from a standpoint of making a judgment call, interpreting somebody's action, interpreting an offer, you know, that a business makes or a car dealer advertisement or whatever, you know, from what evidence are you making your decision? Too often people leap before they look. That's where the other acronym comes from. It's TAI, which is TAI. Is that how you would pronounce that if you were involved in the in this, Timmy?
I guess TAI or TAI. I don't, TAI is THAI, you know, from Thailand. So I don't know, TAI or TAI.
Oh, well, why don't you just complicate things then?
Well,
anyway,
yeah, just trying to be exact.
TAI stands for think about it. And I should have thought about it before I bought that 34-foot camper. Well, the truth of the matter is I should have thought about it longer before I bought the Airstream Base Camp, which was the beginning of my most recent camping adventures. About 5 years ago, I bought a brand-new $40,000 Airstream camper that was only 16 feet long. And I bought it because it looked cool and because I thought we would start camping with my grandson and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And it proved to be too small. We did camp in it some. It proved to be too small, so I traded it for a 34-foot camper with 3 slide-outs. Well, it's turned out to be too big. And plus, you know how many times we camped in it last year?
Once or zero, I guess. Zero or
zero.
One? Okay.
Zero. It sat in the backyard, well, not in the yard, on the driveway, and took up space and got dirty, and we used, and the kids used it as a playhouse, the grandkids.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty expensive playhouse.
Mm-hmm.
You know, thinking about it is so important before you jump into an automotive purchase. You know, I think the best approach when thinking about buying a car is to take the financial transaction completely out of it. When you go to car shopping, don't think about payments. Don't think about the money. Don't think about any of that. Just test drive stuff. You know, when a car salesman walks up to you, if you're at the Honda store or Toyota store or something, say, listen, we're not ready to buy yet, but we want to test drive. We want to learn what we can about your products, and we just want to test drive some stuff. You know, if you're going to a Toyota store and you're interested in a small SUV, you know, you might look at the RAV4. You might consider, you know, maybe test driving that and then test driving a Highlander, a little bit bigger vehicle. I don't know if there's anything in between there or not. Mm-hmm. Maybe even a 4Runner if you feel real sporty and don't mind climbing up into something. But just drive the things, you know, get a presentation, get the salespeople to tell you about it. You'll learn a lot about the dealership, I'll tell you that. You'll learn about whether they are a high-pressure store, whether they are really pushing the customers into making a financial decision. There's some dealerships that you walk in today that immediately, as soon as you walk on the lot, you know, number one, you'll spot the herd of salespeople standing up, and when they see you coming, they all got their eyes on you,
mm-hmm.
and they're waiting for you to land. And then the discussion ensues. Like, you want them? No, I don't. I think it's Bob's turn. So Bob strolls down to you, and they're doing everything they can from the get-go to get you in the showroom and start working numbers.
Mm-hmm.
And that's unfortunate, but that's the business. You know, you've got most salespeople are paid on commission. They don't make a dime unless you buy something. And many times they lose sight of the process, and all they're thinking about is the end goal, and that's to ring the cash register.
Mm-hmm.
So you'll know it. I mean, you'll feel it when you walk in. I hope you never feel that if you come to Gateway Ford and Gateway Nissan. But, you know, occasionally we will have a salesperson that's maybe a little bit more aggressive, and you know, we work really hard to educate our guys to understand the buying process and the thought process that customers need to go through in order to feel comfortable to make a purchase. I mean, Tim, when you think about it, if somebody is really mentally committed to buy something, they're more likely to go ahead and proceed with a financial transaction. But for goodness sake, folks, think about it. You know, look at the car. Take a test drive. You won't hear many car dealers tell you this, but take a test drive, drive multiple things. If you're, you know, if you're in the small SUV realm, which a lot of people are right now, you might come to Gateway and drive a Ford Escape. You might drive the all-new Nissan Rogue. We're selling them like crazy. It's a great selling vehicle. But you also, you know, might be considering a Hyundai Santa Fe, or you might be considering a Honda CR-V or a RAV4. I can't imagine you considering a Mitsubishi, but it's possible. or maybe one of the small BMWs or a small Mercedes. They make small SUVs and crossovers now that some people like, especially if they like buying a German car. But these are things that you need to consider and then go in and test drive them. You don't have to buy anything, but we let that personal urgency that we have to do something. And I agree, Timmy, that some people may be short on time and they just need a new car. You know, they are forced because of circumstances, maybe a blown head gasket that's melted their engine or something like that. Mm-hmm. They have to do something. In that particular case, here's what I'd do. I would call Enterprise Rental Car. And rather than make a big financial mistake, I would go rent a car. And maybe for a couple weeks, they'll give you a deal, and just then go shopping in your rental car. Don't feel like, you know, somebody has to drop you out of the dealership or ride your bicycle to the dealership and say, I'm here to buy a car because I don't have one now. That happens. Sometimes if you've totaled your car or if you have it in the shop or something like that, then, you know, your insurance company is going to provide you with a rental car. But, just don't rush. TAI, think about it. And before you make a decision and you hear all this talk about how good things are, make sure you got the evidence first. Make sure you really are getting the straight shot of information, because there's a lot of falsehoods out there. Today is a big meeting. Motor Vehicle Commission is meeting this morning. And they are this is the first meeting that they have held since they decided to crack down on false dealer advertising.
Mm-hmm.
And so that is available online if you want to watch it. Might be kind of boring for you, but I'm hoping there are some fireworks today, because this needs to happen. There's too much out there. Too many dealers are making claims about trade-in values and guaranteed financing and all this other stuff. It's just so misleading, and I'm just very hopeful that it's going to stop. You know, if somebody's going to offer you so much money for your trade, it ought to be worth that whether you trade or not, shouldn't it, Tim?
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, if somebody's going to offer you like 120% or 130% of book value, then your car should be worth that. Regardless, that's my offer. My offer to folks, I do offer 130% of book value for your trade-in, but I'll do it whether you trade or not. You know, if you just want to sell your car, I'll pay you that. So, you know, that's a real offer. That's cash on the barrel head, as they say. Well, let's take our first break, and we'll be back here in just a minute.
All right, back here on Tuesday morning's edition of My Car Guru with the guru himself, Lenny Lawson.
So, Tim, you and I have talked about accidents and stuff that we've had mm-hmm. in our driving career.
Mm-hmm.
The two accidents that I've had, one was a single car accident when I was about 17 and driving too fast. I was too sleepy. I was in a 1974 Chevy SS Nova with 350 V8, gold with black stripes, and I just about totaled the car. I was a mile from my house. I'd driven all the way from Kingsport mm-hmm. from a concert. I got within a mile,
mm-hmm.
and I don't know what I did. You know, it was back in the days before radial tires, where they were just starting to come out. But rear ends, I swapped ends with it and took out a fence row and pretty much destroyed a brand new car. The other one, I was driving through Tusculum and I got broadsided by a car that didn't see me coming and came out and hit a brand new, Chevy Colorado. In two totally different kinds of accidents. I did have my seatbelt on in both cases. I did not see the spin out happening. That was just loss of control of the car. But I did see the other one coming and was able to try to evade it, but there was a car coming the opposite direction. So I couldn't, you know, I chose the side impact collision to the head on collision. Well, the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, tests vehicles, for crashworthiness. And they have done wonderful things for the safety of automobiles. They have multiple different kinds of tests to try to simulate real-world situations. You know, one of the most common collisions is what they call a moderate overlap front collision. So it's, you know, it's not a dead head-on collision. It's just where the headlights kiss. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
And then there are other kinds of crash tests that they do, everything to test the solidity of the roof, the head restraints, the seats. But they're conducted at low speed, moderate speed. Usually the collisions that they try to duplicate are the ones that are, you know, the most common. Which is the front crash, and it's the crash resulting in the most fatalities. There have been huge strides made in frontal protection, thanks in large part to the crash test program of the government, the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration. They began those in the late 70s, and then IIHS began in 1995. But they recently tested the Ford or the Mustang Mach-E, and it came out with flying colors, and they were really pleased with it. Overall, it got a superior crash test rating. The only ding that it had, they said the headlights in the base model were not bright enough. But, you know, the whole idea is to allow the vehicle to absorb the collision before it gets to the passengers. And any type of intrusion, you know, into the passenger compartment is going to affect the ratings of a vehicle. A lot of the companies have had the biggest problem with protecting the feet area, the, you know, the footwell where the gas pedal and the brakes are. You know, this has been where you know, when a vehicle hits and it's a strong front end collision, that's where the intrusion is going to take place. If you raise the hood on a modern vehicle, I could point out to you, like, for example, that I'm in the Nissan showroom right now and I'm looking at a new Nissan Rogue. If I raise the hood, I could show you several different things that are visible that have been created in order to cause the front of the whole front engine compartment to collapse like an accordion, and to absorb that major impact. You know, modern cars have safety cages, basically. Kind of like a NASCAR. Have you ever, I don't know if you're a NASCAR fan, Tim. I know you've watched a lot of races, and, and a lot of people in this area have. But, I mean, the accidents that these people survive are just amazing. I mean, to have a car catapulting and flying through the air or, you know, rolling multiple times. I'll never forget Rusty Wallace's crash. I mean, that just, they do not look survivable. But, you know, what allows that to happen is the roll cage.
Right.
And the roll cage and the safety nets, the things that keep the driver in place, the five-point harness that they use. Now, as a car owner, you're not protected by a five-point harness. You've got 3 points. You've got the shoulder harness, and you've got the lap belt. And the lap belt is in the buckle, and then it's attached to the floor on the other side, and then you got the shoulder harness. Lots of opportunity for movement still. And, of course, you're not driving 180 miles an hour and crashing into other cars. But still, I love the quote of a state trooper. Don't know who said it, but he said, I've never unbuckled somebody that was killed in a car accident. You know, most of the time, the people that are injured in a car accident is because they didn't have their seatbelt on. And so that's the, probably the most important safety device there is. Airbags are ubiquitous. You don't have to worry about the airbag technology is going to be there unless it has a Takata airbag. And then, you know, if you've ignored your recall notices, you know, you need to stop and get those Takata airbags replaced. Even if you get a notice, you've already had them replaced, you get another notice, you need to get those replaced as well. Of course, it's free. But thank goodness we have something like the Insurance Institute for Highway Safety, because they have done great things to basically protect American drivers and also drivers all over the world in order to make an accident much more survivable. These tests, the manufacturers take them seriously. They have to spend millions of dollars building and crashing cars themselves before they turn them over to the IIHS because they don't want to fail. They don't want to get a bad score. When the new Ford F-150 came out, they had a problem with the super cab version. For some reason or other, the structure in the left front was not strong enough to resist intrusion into the foot area of the F-150. Well, they just left out a brace. They put in a new brace, tested it again, and it passed with flying colors. Little things do matter. But anyway, if you ever want to see what the ratings are, they're actually on the window sticker of every car, and I would investigate that before you plunk down your good money on a car thinking it's safe when it may just, you know, not have that good of a ratings.
Yeah.
Well, we'll take our last break and be back in just a minute.
Back here on My Car Guru for the final couple of minutes on a Tuesday morning. You know, it's interesting, Lenny, you were talking about NASCAR safety and how some of those accidents, I remember Michael Waltrip flipping over the wall at Bristol one time, and he survived that because of the roll cage, and we've seen so many of those. But yet, when Dale Earnhardt crashed, of course, in 2001 at Daytona, it was the early Hans device, you know, and it wasn't attached properly, I believe, for Earnhardt, and so just that certain collision without that safety measure in place proved to be the difference.
Yeah, I mean, in truth, I believe Dale did not believe in the Hans device and didn't have it on at all.
Yeah.
And, you know, that was, I remember when I did the Richard Petty driving experience at Charlotte Motor Speedway, and I got to do 30 laps at Charlotte, basically in 10-lap sessions. So, I mean, it was just me in a NASCAR race car with a pace car in front of me, And as long as you maintained, you know, good speed, the pace car would continue to increase its speed. And I eventually got up to where my top speed was 165 miles an hour, which is probably about 20 miles an hour less than what the drivers are doing. But see, you know, I'm driving around that track, and there's nobody but me in the car in front of me. Imagine doing that with a car on either side of you, mm-hmm. you know, in close proximity. And so, but one of the things that we did, that was the early days of the Hans device, and so I used it, and it was attached to my helmet. It's not like the device that they have now. They've had multiple generations of that. This was the early days. But, right. you know, it's all about keeping your head from moving forward real rapidly and, mm-hmm. and causing trauma to your neck. But all of this stuff adds up, and most of the innovations that have come in automotive safety have come through racing. And it's not just safety, but it's, you know, performance. You know, the brakes that we use today, the engine technology, a lot of that comes from racing. But safety is paramount. And, gosh, I think about the 60s, the 50s, the Formula One drivers, you know, they're going 180 miles an hour at Monza in Italy and down the straight stretch, and they don't even have a seatbelt on.
Yeah.
And the fear back then, Tim, was fire. You know, they would rather be ejected from a car than burn up. Right. You know, they didn't have the high technology on the fuel tanks to keep them from exploding. And But they used to call those the killing years. And Enzo Ferrari had a terrible reputation for losing drivers and being very callous about it. So anyway, safety has been a big part of the industry, and we're definitely fortunate to have the safety that levels of safety that we have in today's automotive world. And it's been a combination of government, insurance companies, and automotive makers that have made that happen for Americans.
Absolutely. All right, that will do it for My Car Guru on this Tuesday morning, and that'll wrap it up. Lenny, we'll talk to you tomorrow.